You're listening to the Support Ops Hangout, episode number 40. Hey everyone, welcome back to the live Support Ops Hangout. This is episode number, I should have the episode number in front of me when I do this stuff. Episode 40! This is like midlife crisis moment for us. There's 40 episodes so far. This is our weekly discussion that helps you deliver a better support experience to all of your customers. Basically, long story short, if you've got customers, then you need to be watching our show. Not just because we've got two guys on that are absolutely fantastic for today's show. That's like a side treat. That's like a bonus treat. The big thing that you're going to get out of this is how to help your customers out when it comes to that support experience they have with you. So before we get too far into the episode, let's go ahead and meet the guys that we're talking about. Now, this week, Carolyn's out. She's still in Cape Town. And Chase Livingston is out for, I don't know why. I don't have a good reason for it. We're going to say he wandered off into a field and we haven't seen him yet. So,
sounds good to me.
Yeah, maybe he's got a better story when he comes back for us on that. But Jeff Vincent is here, as always. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good, Chase. How are you?
Fantastic. I love it. It's a good Monday so far.
Good.
And we're not going to make any like weather jokes or anything. We have to wait for Chase Livingston for that one.
Yes.
And then we also have a brand new smiling face. That's the other guy around here, Aaron. Aaron from Moz. How are you?
Hey there. I'm great. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. So, Aaron, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about who you are, what you do, that kind of thing.
Oh, certainly. So my name is Aaron Wheeler. I've been at Moz for about 4 years now. Used to be SEO Moz. We're an inbound marketing software company. So basically, if you're trying to get like analytics around all your internet crazy fun times, like your site, traffic, and stuff like that, and Google Analytics doesn't provide that type of stuff for you, that's where we sort of come in. So give you information on social and like site crawls, SEO type stuff. But yeah, and I lead our help team. We're a team of about 9 right now, and we mostly do emails, chats, some phone support, and try and do whatever we can to keep customers and keep them happy.
My favorite part of all that was the crazy fun times. You're speaking my language.
That's the internet, right? Crazy fun times. With people like Chase and Jeff, it's crazy out there.
Awesome. So today we're talking about really just like quick and easy wins that you can do with your customer support experience that's going to have some big impacts. You know, you don't have a lot of time necessarily every week to do like these big massive projects, right? So we want to give you a couple of different ideas that you can, you know, you can start doing in like an hour or two, or maybe an afternoon or a morning, just whenever you got some free time to kind of do that. So we're going to start with Jeff on this one. Since Aaron's the guest, we're going to kind of let him like, we're going to ease him into this really nicely rather than just like throw him into the sharks. So Jeff, if you had like an afternoon to work on something that would help out your customers, that would make their experience with Wistia better, just one afternoon, so like a couple of hours, what would you be doing?
Chase, this is such a hard question.
Yes, this is great. I give you like easy softballs too much. So
you, I know, it's so true. I'm always saying, Chase, this one's really easy.
See?
So I think to a certain extent, this depends on who you know you are and who you work for, right? What your customer's current level of experience is. So when I'm thinking about this, right, instead of, I don't want to give like my specifics away. Like if you gave me 2 hours, what project would I work on? Not very useful for everybody listening. But the way I think about this is stepping back a second and saying, what's our biggest goal? So our biggest goal is take X benefit that our software is designed to help people with. How do we help them do that as clearly as and easily and quickly and happily as possible? So in the support context, it's like something's broken down and they had to reach out. So now how do we get them back on the path to doing this awesome thing as quickly and easily as possible? So for, you know, in our early days, one of the things that I think would have been a really easy and quick win for me would be to identify what's one problem that a lot of people are experiencing that they feel like they have to reach out to us for, and how can I give them that answer quicker? Right? And there's two ways to approach that. One is, how do we make the product better so that you don't even have that question, or like the messaging? And then the second thing is, how do we put resources in place so that when they do run into that problem, they know exactly where to go and how to get that info? So the way that we approach this is look at the customer's experience and find where there are places where, like, our ultimate support goal, which is how do we get them back on the path to doing awesome things really quickly and easily, where that's being disrupted. So an example in my current life is, right now, if you have an issue, we may give you a support email, but we force you to then open up your email client and, like, paste in the email that you're trying to send it to and then start typing in your issue. And that worked really well, or that made a ton of sense to us in the past, but perhaps I could take 2 hours and add some sort of contact form into the product so that now you don't have to open up your email client and remember what the email is and paste it just right and all of this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's all about looking, it's about thinking about what your high-level goal is and then looking at places where the customer's experience gets kind of, you know, somehow broken up in there. In the last episode that I was on, we talked about building a quick tool that would help you find customer accounts if you're like a support rep. So something like that makes a ton of sense, right? Something that slows you down in providing support, we should try to iron those types of things out. And so we live by sort of two mantras. The first one is make it really easy. Make it easy for your customers, make it easy for you, make it easy for like support reps, people who are trying to solve the problem. And then, as you know, the second one is the best support is no support. And one thing that I've sort of added to make that easier to understand, because a lot of people when they first hear that are like, does that mean that you're going to get rid of your support team? The third one that I've added recently, or sort of a caveat to that second one, is that we should automate wherever we can and be intensely human wherever we can. So perhaps something that you could do with a quick afternoon is looking at someone who's experiencing a major issue and just call them up and walk through it and make sure you have all the context. I mean, these are just some ideas. I think it's really hard to pin down exactly what you should do, but you should just look at your high-level goals and figure out where your customer's current experience is falling short, and then you'll just project ideas will just start coming to you.
See, I knew it was one of us that had said, like, one of our team, like here on the Hangout, that was talking about the automate where you can, be intensely human where you can't. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't figure out who it was. So I'm glad now that I know it was you. And I think that's brilliant. I mean, it's kind of a great mindset to have there. It was one of those. I went to log into MailChimp earlier today and couldn't remember the password. Like, I thought I had the right one in 1Password, but I also, like, changed a bunch of them recently because of the whole Heartbleed thing, so I wasn't entirely for sure. So I put in the password that 1Password said it was the wrong one, and when MailChimp tells you it's the wrong password, they also have a little link in there that says, hey, we're here to help if you want to reset your password. So it's shown below the login box, along with that one up at the top when they show you the error message. So your error message goes from being like this, well, you put in the wrong password, to, hey, you put in the wrong password, here's how we can help you get the right one. Here's how we can help you get in and quit worrying about, like, logging into this app that you want to use.
Totally. I think that's probably a simple case of they took the normal sort of workflow, which is this forgot password thing, right? Which I guess, you know, as you rightfully point out, like, has some negative connotations. People are like, well, I didn't forget it. Maybe I just didn't write it down the first time or something. Or like, maybe your software is just stupid and doesn't remember the password that I wanted to enter. And they said, how can we change that to make people's experience of all this a little bit better? I think I probably wouldn't choose that one first, but I think that in the long run, that's a great one to tackle.
Yeah, and it's one of those, like, I wonder, I wish I had, like, data from MailChimp. I sent them an email and haven't heard back yet, but I was, like, really curious, like, did they track how many people, like, forget their password and then would just write to support rather than seeing that link down below? Like, once they moved it up into the error message, like, how much did that help out not only the customers, but, like, how much of a load did it take off the support team too? If I find out, I'll let you know. Now, Aaron, when it comes to Moz, like, what's, you know, if you're working for, like, same question, like, if you've got a weekend, I'm not going to give you a weekend to do this. If you've got an afternoon to kind of like make the support experience, make the customer experience a little bit better somehow, like what's going through your mind? What things are you thinking about when you start on that?
Yeah. First off, I really love that automate what you can, humanize what you can't. I think that's a good motto for everything. And in fact, that's something that I try to apply internally as well to our company.
Jeff, you're going to have to go out and like trademark that now.
Right, yeah, I know. Right. I'm going to have to steal it.
give it away.
Slapping on water bottles, make some mad money.
Make some cash.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's good because it ties into this. So last week I happened to have a spare afternoon, and I was trying to think about ways that we could, like one of the bigger problems here is I feel like our customers have so much to say just by virtue of writing into us. Basically, like Jeff said, if they're writing in, there's already been like a problem. That needs to get addressed. And so if you can fix the problem, that's great, but lots of times you can't. So you need to help them out when it's not fixed. And so how can you do both of those things based on the tickets that you're getting in? So I sat down and I was trying to think, like, how could we change these tickets that we're getting into like action items? And so just in an afternoon, I mean, if you really want to take the 4 hours, I think you can take an hour with your product manager and your engineering manager, or whoever is right for those positions, and sort of hear from them. Like, Chase, I was telling you a little bit about this before the show. Like, how do you want us to serve you this data? Like, if I give you this data in the right way, will you actually start like adding Jira tickets or adding like, you know, support tickets internally to get fixes made? Similarly, like, we have someone internal to our team creating documentation. Like, what do you need to see from us from tickets to edit the documentation? And so I'll pass it off to Nick, our documentation lead, and he comes back to me with like, well, I want to see like at least 5 tickets about an issue before I start like making changes to the documentation on it. So that's really helpful. So what I did was after I met with them, I sort of thought about, okay, they need this, they need the volumes, and they need like actionable like recommendations. So what I did was I added a couple fields in, we use Zendesk. I added a couple fields in there, required fields, and told the team, like, there's 2 new fields in there. The first field is, it's just a one-line entry for a summary of the feedback, and you should write that for every ticket, not just someone saying, like, this is explicitly feedback. And then one line that says recommended action. And so that, in that line, as your unique creative, like, self, think of the one thing that you would do that would prevent this ticket from happening again in the future. And so I was able to do all that in a pretty short period of time. Actually getting people to do it's another thing, but I think it's going well so far. And what I think it's doing is a couple different things. It's one, getting the agents, getting the people on your team to really feel like empowered to make changes, or at least think about what kind of changes they could make. And then two, at the end of the week, when you like have someone spend some time like going through them, or even like doing a cursory glance at all those different items, you can see this huge list of ideas on how to get fixes made. So it really felt like a breakthrough when we launched this. We did it. All my lights just went out. That's kind of weird.
That is awesome.
Okay, I jumped up. All the lights went back on.
That is straight up like Blair Witch.
That was I think you should have left the lights off. It looked awesome.
That was really creepy. I guess the lights go off after an hour, and I've been relatively still, so I don't know.
I'm just saying, look around for any kind of like creepy crawly things.
I'm a little concerned. There's like suddenly a bunch of musical instruments, some sort of
creepy doll in the corner.
Come in. Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe they're angry that I'm talking about changing our product and our documentation. I don't know. But anyway, so you take all that, you review it, and then you finally have like a way to make progress on some of these things. Like, you can pass off those action items to product people. You can, at the very least, create better documentation based off of like the summaries that your team has created. And so it's like moving from a totally after-the-fact analysis of all of this feedback to a in-the-moment mini sort of analysis. I don't know. We'll see how it goes, but I think it's one way that you can like start making some of these tickets into like action. So we'll see.
Yeah, I like that. There's, you know, all these emails coming in. You've got to be able to figure out some way to parse all that into an actual item. Like, let's do this because this will affect these tickets. And that can kind of be one of those things where, especially if like you're a smaller team and you're just trying to get through the queue at the end of the day, like stopping and looking at a ticket and going, hey, how could I solve this in the future? Isn't at the top of like your mindset or your priority list at the time. But you've got to be able to do that because that's the only way you're ever going to get ahead of the game by figuring out those things that you've got to do. Like if you never set it, let me say it this way. If you never set aside the time to look at your tickets in that way, then you're always going to be behind the ball. You're always going to be playing catch up because you're never going to be able to put some like defenses up to help you get ahead of that.
Exactly. And it really only takes like, you know, 20 seconds. If you're doing them all at once, you know, of course it takes forever, but I think it's a small action and I think it could potentially create like big changes at a company. So we'll see.
Yeah. And you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about trying to figure out a way to kind of package things up neatly. And that's one of the things, like when you go in for these quick and easy wins, when you've got an afternoon set aside or maybe a day set aside or a weekend or something like that, you want to go in and have something that's neatly packaged to work with. You want to be able to say, all right, here's all the data that I have. Here's what it's saying to me. And here's the one or two things that I'm going to work on and get them knocked out. And go from there. Like you don't want to just wander in and be like, oh, I want to see like all the feature requests that we had for last week, and then I'll figure out something that I can do that will help out with everyone.
Exactly, and it might turn out like some of those recommended actions that just we never thought about it before, so we didn't ever put it in. But it could be as simple as like get this one tooltip, you know, changed to be something a little bit more descriptive. That's mm-hmm. so easy; you could get that done in like 15 minutes. I mean, at some companies, at ours maybe so. I don't know.
Yeah. Speaking of, like, we did that this week. A customer had written into us, and it wasn't like this big, like, you know, ticket after ticket after ticket requesting this, but a guy had written in and said, hey, look, you know, like, Basecamp comments come with timestamps that are relative. So it would say, like, this comment was posted last Monday at 7 a.m. or last Thursday at such and such, which is nice if you've got, like, all right, you know, it was yesterday, right? So if it was like, last Sunday at 7 a.m., I would go, oh, okay, that was yesterday. But once you kind of get back farther than that, it gets kind of confusing. So the guy was looking for specific timestamps, like this happened on Thursday at such and such time, yada, yada. And we didn't want to like make that big of a change right away, especially just for one person. But we used the little tooltips. So like when you hover over the comment, it gives you the specific timestamp for that comment, which took maybe, I think we talked about it for 15 or 20 minutes. And then one of the designers worked on it for maybe another 15, 20 minutes. And that was out. So, you know, little awesome. Things, you know, like the tooltips, like you were mentioned, things that you wouldn't think about until like you start looking at the problem and go, yeah, I can solve this in like this really easy way instead of this big, massive change.
Right.
So Jeff, have you ever, like with Wistia, has there ever been like a problem y'all come up to and instead of like pushing this big massive change or anything, it was just something simple like changing some wording or tweaking a tooltip or something?
Pretty much every day. I hope every day we solve something a little bit like that.
He's going to one-up all of us and be like, look, we do this every day.
Yeah,
like that's a great time. Story you got, Chase, but that was like once a month. Good job.
Yeah, exactly, Chase. Let me just destroy your life right now. We do have a very large Trello board full of these types of things where it's like, you know, you could sit in a room and fight over what the copy should be on a certain modal or next to a button or whatever, or you could listen really carefully to what you could listen to people who have issues around that thing and, you know, then jump on the phone with them and say, did you know that this was like what we were trying to get at there? And they're like, no, not at all. I thought it meant this. And it's like, oh, what an easy win for us to just improve that. I think also there is a certain amount of, sometimes it's like, there's like a building element. You kind of like are building it and you're putting it all together and you're doing it like at your computer with your headphones on. And then there's this editing thing that comes later where it's like, how does it exactly fit into what everything else that you're doing? And when they use, you know, your customer's kind of going along and they're clicking all these buttons and they end up on this page, like, given what they've seen so far, are they going to be totally confused about what you're writing right there? Even though it's, like, the friendliest and in the current context clearest thing, it's like, I can't think of an example in my head, but if screen one says one thing and screen two says something that doesn't quite line up, right? Like different verbiage or whatever.
Little things, like one page calls it preferences and the other page calls it settings.
Settings, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's like those types of things can happen when you're trying to kind of, you know, build a product quickly and no one is like sitting there looking at every single screen all the time. It just doesn't happen. So making it easy for, I think that Aaron is exactly right, that making it easy for somebody to say, you know, here's one little thing that we could do right now that would maybe it would eliminate this, maybe it wouldn't, but it would certainly make it a lot easier for most customers to do this. I don't see any harm, right? I only see upside in making this change. Mm-hmm. So one example would be we have a replace video feature, which I think is pretty neat. It's like if you put a video out in the wild and you realize that like you misspelled, you know, you have Chase Kelmans instead of Clemens, and you
happens all the time.
Right, exactly. And you need to go in and make that little change. So the video is exactly the same. It's just maybe like a subtitle is wrong or something like that. You can upload a new version and it automatically goes into all the places you have the video embedded. It saves people a ton of time. The only problem is if you were a customer like 2 or 3 years ago, any video that you embedded way back then won't be updated automatically. So we felt like we wanted to tell people that. And when we released the feature, it was close enough to that time frame that it made sense to like warn them when they were getting in there. But now the number of customers we have that have no idea what that situation is far, far outweighs the customers that we had back then. So it was like the warning was just, it was literally just confusing for most people. It wasn't adding any type of value at all. So we went back in and made it conditional logic, which is like the easiest thing. You look at the age of the account, and if it was around way back then you give them the message. And then the awesomest part about this, awesomest, happy, fun time part of all of this, is that because they're longtime loyal customers, it also made sense to give them something. It was like a great time for us to say, hey, you're an awesome loyal customer, so we offer a free T-shirt. If you open that modal for the very first time and you trip the legacy account conditional, we also offer you a link to a T-shirt. So, yeah, it was like
a great Easter egg.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
That's my favorite Easter egg right now, I think, that we have.
Like, I have a pretty old Wistia account, so we should probably go in there and get one of them shirts.
Yeah, you might want to think about trying that. Yeah, so I don't know if I finished the thought on that, but it's like, you know, let people make those changes, and you'll be shocked at how much they improve the experience for everybody.
Yeah, and that's one of those things, you know, I think kind of everybody knows what we mean by modals, but if you don't, that's kind of like when you're on a site and you click on like cancel your account, the next page that you go to actually cancel that account is the modal that's happening there. So that's what Jeff's talking about. And we kind of had the same problem too. So with Basecamp, you've got Basecamp Classic and then the new Basecamp, the latest version of Basecamp, and they're two different apps. They're two entirely different accounts. So whenever you cancel one of them, it doesn't cancel the other one. We didn't want to like automatically cancel both in case you were still using one of those, right? So for the longest time, we just said on the modal there that, hey, you know, you're canceling this account. Sorry to see you go. And that's that. And we would find people writing back to us like 3 or 4 months later and being like, hey, I've still got this other Basecamp charge on my card. Like, what's going on? And they never put, like, it made sense to us because we were working with Basecamp Classic and new Basecamp accounts like all day long. But if like that's the first time you ever encountered that, it just didn't make a lot of sense. So on the modal, we did the same thing. You put a conditional in that said, hey, if they have a Basecamp Classic account, then you show that account and you say, do you want us to cancel this one too? And it just completely dropped off the number of confused customers that we had, the number of email cases that we had about that. Saves us a little bit of money in the long run because every time you refund, you're paying the processing company a little bit more on it. So it just made sense. Like those modals are really great. Like you don't have to think about them as like this just temporary thing. Like you can explain something on that page or offer a free T-shirt. That's such a great Easter egg. God.
So I just, while you were yammering on about God knows what, I opened the Trello board that I was talking about, and I just wanted to just give you a little bit more context about what I mean by like some of these sort of like polishing, some of these little edge cases that people might find So like better error reporting when someone uploads something without an extension. So if you upload a video that has no extension on it, I guess we just give up. Merging two different docs, two different pieces of documentation that really should be together, merging the two of those. Add a reason to purchase question on the final buy page. So after you click buy, we're going to ask, like, hey, you know, if you don't mind us asking, like, what was it that actually brought you to this page today and made you want to click this buy button? Yeah, so there's like a lot of stuff on this list, and it mostly comes from having a conversation with someone and being like, wow, I never really thought of it that way, but I can see how, from your perspective, it's, you know, confusing or wrong or whatever, and I'm going to throw this, you know, an item on this list, and one of us will get it done. And it's kind of cool that we can be transparent in that way, because then a customer maybe months later logs in, you know, and in the case of some of these things, sees them improved and is like, oh my god, I had a part in that. That's so cool.
It feels like they're a little part of the Wistia team.
Totally.
You should send them a t-shirt.
You're right.
Got to send a t-shirt.
It's all about t-shirts. That's what it's all about for Chase Clements. He just wants the damn t-shirt.
That's all it is. And really, I'll be honest, like, whenever I go to conferences or stuff, like, everybody's giving away t-shirts, 90% of those t-shirts end up as, like, stain rags in my wood shop. So don't give me a t-shirt.
Yeah, just offer to give him a t-shirt. That's where it's at.
To be honest, I wasn't planning on giving you a t-shirt, Clements.
Good, because, you know, you would see, like, the picture of my new wood project, and then I'd have like a Wistia stain rag from a shirt over on the side.
You strike me as kind of a button-up guy anyway, so most of the time it would probably be covered up.
It's true. I look good in flannel. I mean, you know.
Hey, you look good in anything, Chase, but I appreciate you wearing a flannel.
See, Aaron, this is what happens when you come on the show. It gets...
Oh, I'm very happy.
We got to have Carolyn here to like keep us on like our focus.
Nah, I think the people want to hear about flannels. I'm pretty sure. I am from Seattle, so, I mean, it's flannel time.
He's talked to the people, and it's flannel time.
I've talked to them a lot. That is a show.
So, Aaron, you know, you mentioned earlier you've got these. So each ticket that comes in kind of gets this nice summary that goes out, that goes with it, that gets attached with it. Is it just you that's looking at those? Like, can anybody on the team see that list of different things that are going on?
No, it's everybody. So it's everyone on our team can look at it. I think the only people that do are two of the people that have been on the team longer and are, like, the way that we structure our teams here, because we're pretty big now. We're about 130 people. So we split up products by, we call them adventure teams, kind of like Adventure Time.
That was my first thing. I was like, Adventure Time?
Our Rand, our CEO, our old CEO, is very fond of Adventure Time. So, yeah. Anyway, so they'll read this feedback and then go to their, like, adventure team and be able to give some of that at the adventure team. But that's just on a, you know, person-to-person, non-quantitative scale. I think where it's really going to get interesting is when we... So basically, we can use good data as the, like, you know, advanced reporting feature of Zendesk to pull in those fields, since they're separate from the ticket, like, comment field. Pull those in along with pulling in the fields for, like, what cohort they're in. So are they second month, third month, and their user IDs. And once we combine all of that and parse it in good data, I think that full-on report will be something that we can pass off to the rest of the company. I think we will. Whether they're like good solutions to stuff or bad, I mean, it's really just sort of like a brain dump of what we're seeing and what we're thinking. But yeah, we have this, I've talked about it before, but we have this customer service digest we send out to the rest of the company. And I think we're going to try and put like the best feedback chunks in that. Mm-hmm. So hopefully everyone looks at it and gets really curious, but I mean, it depends how well we do it. Turning the data into like bigger chunks rather than just fragmented, you know, 3,000 different pieces of information a month.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best ways to kind of find these quick and easy wins that we've been talking about. We do something similar. So when a ticket is tagged with feature request inside of Desk, it automatically shows up on a different page that we have for our internal app that's nothing but like different ideas that are coming in. And it's really easy to kind of like scan through those and get an idea of like what people are looking at, what's on people's minds at any given moment. And if you want more info about something, you just click on the link and that takes you over to the case where we are actually talking to them about different things. So, you know, we mentioned earlier about like having a plan where you're going to spend this hour or two or this afternoon when you work on knocking out one of these things. When you're looking for something to work on, have a Trello board like Wistia does, have some kind of customer digest or idea board or something that'll kind of like let you know, yeah, this is the stuff that we want to be working on.
I love that Trello board idea. I'm totally going to steal that, Jeff. So
go for it.
Don't worry. I'll take credit and everything. I'll just, I'll send you a shirt. Don't worry.
Okay. That sounds great. Yeah, no, send me a Moz water bottle. My SEO Moz water bottle had to go. I had to throw that away because you're no longer SEO Moz.
Yeah, so you got
to
throw it away. No one uses those guys anymore. No one.
I need an updated water bottle. I think what's really interesting about this is that there is this balance between you need to have the biggest – so the way that we approach this is at the end of the week, we do this inbox inventory that basically ends up bubbling up like what's the three biggest issues that we dealt with this week. So we use tags to like tag each email, and each email sort of fits into a bucket, and it's like our biggest issue this week was uploading. A lot of people having trouble uploading because of, this, and this, and that sort of – spurs a lot of conversation around like how can we improve this, right? So there's that, and I think it's really important to have that stuff like top of mind. But also, I think based on this conversation, it's important to also have an outlet for the little tiny stuff. But it's just like there may only be one issue or one email a month that no longer has to be sent in because of this fix, but yet the experience is better, the cognitive load is lower for everyone, right? And that one customer that would have had an issue is like, oh, I get it, and who knows like how many people they may tell about their fantastic experience with Basecamp or Moz or whatever as a result. So it's important to know what the big issues are, but don't, I think that it's natural to say like, well, this thing is not one of our biggest issues, so should we really be working on this? And it's like, yeah, when you only have an hour, 30 minutes or 2 hours, and part of that time is spent like spinning up and context switching and all of that stuff, it's more important to do something that has a positive impact on your customers than it is to say, well, the only thing I can work on are my three biggest issues. And all three of those require, dev time and QA and all of this stuff that just prevents you from making any movement on that whatsoever.
Yeah, small things, you can just start. Just do it.
I'd love to ask you guys too. So, I mean, one of the problems we have with that is those top three things that we notice are pretty much the same every week. In fact, I might even say like the top 10 things are the same every week. But like you said, they require dev time, QA, so we end up holding off on them. But if we're reporting on the same 10 issues every week, people get fatigued and there's, maybe they're scheduled, but they're 2 months out, 3 months out, so it's not helpful to report on. So it feels like reporting in that middle area of like, these are the top 10 things after the 20th thing. These are the things that maybe we can make progress on. And sure, they're not like 100 customers helping, but they're 10. Or is that not a problem for you guys? Do you two both see, you get these top three issues last week and then, bam, they're fixed by the next week? How is that for you both?
You want to go, Jeff? You want to take that one first?
Sure. So
Jeff's gonna be like, dude, look, like we fix these like in a day. Come on.
No.
Yeah, I know.
It's definitely not the latter. We have had some really long running major issues. And I think what we found that's really useful for that stuff is you wanna do as much of the legwork for other teams as you can. So for us, like a major issue for the longest time is that if an account gets auto-canceled, right, they don't pay their bill for whatever reason and they ignore all the emails we send them for God knows what reason, their account gets automatically canceled. at that point, we always get an email from them saying, oh, hey, my credit card, I forgot all about that. I think it was caught up in a fraud scam thing. Can you, like, unlock my account so I can reactivate it or whatever, so I can put in new credit card info? And on one hand, you want to be like, dude, why did you ignore all the emails we already sent you? But on the other hand, it's like, of course. But the best part would be if they never had to reach out to us, and it's just like, your account's canceled. You go to the login page, you log in, and the only thing you can do is update your credit card information, so it's really easy for you to do. And so what we did with that was, the support, because no one was really moving on that, and it was really frustrating, the support folks, like, we elected someone who was going to be sort of in charge of that issue. They were going to be the point person for that issue, and they did a lot of the things that we think, like, our understanding is that that's necessary to build great products. So we did, like, the user story on that, right? How much value are we providing, or how are we losing by not fixing this issue? When does it come up? How many times does it come up? What's, like, the optimum workflow for all of this stuff? And then how should it look? And, of course, when you say how does it look, you know, we're not, none of us are designers. I can tell you for sure my color choices are nowhere near as good as a real trained designer would be. But I do think we have a good sense of, from talking to customers and working through all these things, like, how should it flow, right? And I think that's really helpful for our design team, because then they understand how it should flow, and they're able to sort of jump right in and feel like they don't have to take, like, weeks of time to sort of think through and interview people on how this should work. So giving a point person so that it's not the entire team getting together and commiserating over, ugh, I still haven't fixed this problem, like, what a bunch of bums. And then that person also is in charge of putting together a doc that presents, you know, a case for why this is important and how we think that they should move forward.
Awesome.
It makes it so much easier to then go back to them and actually get them to take action.
That's great. That seems great.
Yeah, we do something similar. So every meetup that we have, there's a support top three. So we pick the top three things that are like, this needs movement. And these are things like we can't do, like support can't do by ourselves. We have to have a designer, or a developer, a programmer, somebody to help out with these. And for each of those, you know, we get up in front of the company, and there's usually one or two people that say, all right, here's the problem. Here's the emails that we've got about it, so you can kind of see that problem from different people's eyes. And then we're going to walk you through the problem. So, like, a big one for us is there's not a way to move projects from one Basecamp account to another. Like, they're locked in the one that you've got, which works against, like, people that, you know, maybe you're your web designer had a client who used Basecamp with their project. Now they really want it for their company, but their project is locked in the web designer's Basecamp account. So, like, we're losing out on money and kind of causing a customer to be frustrated before they even get started and they want to open a new account. So once we got up and kind of, like, walked through all of that with everyone in the company, that, you know, it was kind of this consensus that got built that, yeah, we really need to get to handle this. So, that's one of the ones on the top three. It stays in a Basecamp project so everybody can see it. And we add, like, we add case links to that whenever we get them. So if I see, like, an account, somebody that wants to move projects between an account, I might put that case link on that same kind of to-do thread. So everyone knows, hey, this is still an active project. I mean, an active problem that we have going on. And then we get to, like, the next meetup. If it's still not fixed by then it stays on the top three list. And we go, hey, guys. All right, so here's the problem that we all talked about. Here's what we think. Here's the reason why we think that we didn't do that in the last couple of months since the meetup. And usually we see some movement then. But, yeah, the big thing is, like, to have it in a visible place somewhere that people aren't going to forget about it.
Yep.
Yeah, that sounds like something I could do. Like, that sounds like a quick and easy win for us, like actually documenting and having someone be, hey, you're point person on this, build a doc, keep track of the interactions, bam. Like, I'm going to do that when we're done.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Buy him a t-shirt and be like, my top problem is, and then they just wear it to the office every day.
Yeah, exactly. You can draw in a little, like, whiteboard on it.
Yeah,
sounds
exactly.
Good. Yeah.
Another thing that we are working on that I'm really excited about is we're going to be doing hack nights. Like, the entire company is invited. Not everyone is required. But I think it'll be a really fun way. We're a Ruby and Rails shop, and it'll be a really fun way for support a lot more support people who want to get a little bit more technical, that's something that they're excited about, to come and participate in the solution of a problem that has been sort of vexing them or plaguing them for a really long time. So, for example, this is going to shock everyone in the room. If you want to convert from a monthly payment to an annual payment, that is a manual process for us. So we have to calculate all of that for you, and figure out how that billing works. And it is a mess. And the worst is when you switch them to annual, and then 2 weeks later they're like, oh, you know, actually I did not get approval from my boss on that, so I'm gonna have to switch back to monthly. And so it's like it is such a terrible headache. So what we're gonna try to do at our next hack night, and we've already scoped it by email and sort of talked about it. We should have used a Basecamp project, but that's another story. what we're going to do is all sit down and actually work on this problem together over, you know, sushi or whatever. And it gives people this great feeling of like, okay, it's not I have a major issue, so I have to run to convince someone else to work on this problem for me. There's also this feeling of there's these really hard problems that maybe require like a lot of planning and a lot of like maybe like a fundamental change in the way that our app works, right? So like the Basecamp stuff, like moving something from one account to another, that's like a total change in the data model. Like that, we would not tackle that. But then there's these low-hanging things that we could do in an afternoon, and people should be free to do those whenever they want. And there's this mid-range type of stuff where it's like, it's going to require, you know, maybe like 9-10 man hours, but we could all do it together. And everybody sort of levels up and like learns a new thing. I don't know. I'm really, really excited about the idea of we have a problem. We scope it in advance. We go in, order a bunch of food, and when we come out, like the solution is there, like all shiny and like it's like rotating and it's floating and you don't know why it's floating, but it's like golden and beautiful. So yeah, it's something else I guess to consider.
Jeff, I really want to see your website. The one that you would design with your colors, designed your way, Jeff. Oh, man.
So ugly.
It'd be like a 3D model of his head that was just rotating in space.
Shooting out rainbows from his mouth and eyes.
Oh. All right, gents, that's all I got on that topic. Any last thoughts you want to throw in before we head into the shout-outs?
That was great. You guys are helpful.
Can I do one minor tangent?
Go for it.
I think this kind of goes back to my original point. I think that there's something here about how by attacking our customers' biggest problems or like thinking about how we get them back to achieving the benefits that they wanted when they signed up in the first place, we actually are creating a delightful experience. And there has been this sort of like undercurrent or argument lately that delight is dead. And I read an article recently about how delight is dead and like how the Zappos thing of, you know, providing a pizza to someone who calls and like staying on the phone with them for like 12 hours at a time at a customer service center is wrong-headed, and we shouldn't be doing that. And it's an interesting article. You'll have to track it down. It's by Michael from HubSpot. But the problem here is that he's focused on the micro experience, right? And I don't think we can take every single interaction that we have with every customer and say, okay, how do I get this guy to delight, right? How do I make sure that this guy's going to click the little green smiley at the bottom of my email? How do I, you know, this guy seems really down in the dumps. Maybe I could send him like some candy or something. Like it's not about trying to turn every conversation into delight. But instead it's about looking at their whole experience and saying, how do I make sure that their experience with Wistia is delightful? Right? So we can't look at it in the individual, like the micro or the silo of support and say, support must be a delightful for every single customer that comes like along. Instead it's like, how do we take the insights that we learned from this customer and make sure that the next person never has to experience that, therefore making the entire experience closer to this like wow, delightful type of thing. So yeah, I would just urge people when they're thinking about these projects to think, what did people come to us in the first place for and where are we falling short? And that it isn't about, I can create evangelists by sending everyone a t-shirt, right? That's something that I've like learned along the way, is that it's not, the thank you note is more useful because you're taking the time to say it's important to, you know, you've helped me build my business. It's less helpful to say, I spent the time to write this so that you would write me a favorable review on your website, right? Mm-hmm. So these things are not, I give you something, you immediately give me something in return. They all add up to this macro, delightful, you know, sharing, building loyalty type of thing. So yeah, that's been kind of plaguing me this week, and I haven't been able to get my thoughts out, but that's how I'm feeling about that.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add.
I was just gonna say, like, the trend I see is the same. It's looking towards like maximizing value per interaction rather than like the long term. We're making, you know, the world a better place by being humans with each other instead of, you know, automatons. And I didn't read that piece. I will, but I see, you know, we're also in marketing, like HubSpot, and I see a lot of companies like moving to these customer loyalty, customer success. We're even doing this, like, move towards customer success, but I hate the idea of it being success is you're maximizing value of each customer more than like making people happy, because like ultimately they're successful if they go with a different product, if they're not meant for your product, you know?
That's a good point.
So I totally agree. I mean, it's a very short-term way of thinking about it. Like, write me this review because I gave you a happy package, you know? Silly.
Right. Yeah, of creating the sort of like mechanisms in our support to make sure that everyone is delighted is not the right way to do this. But also the flip side of that is not give up on delight and just assume that delight is dead and that there's nothing we can do about delight and that the only thing we can do is just make sure we respond quickly. Instead, it's like looking at the problem holistically, you're going to see, well, there are also a lot of places they never needed to write in the first place. And if we eliminate those, it's not that support then creates more delightful experiences, it's that Wistia itself and the experience of using it is more delightful because you never had to reach out to support. So I think that actually thinking about delight in one particular silo is probably not going to be as impactful as looking at the entire experience and saying, how can that entire experience be delightful? Delight's not dead.
It's not dead. Viva delight.
Not dead.
Viva delight. Jeff's spinning head.
I was thinking about all those poor people that they're not going to get a chance to write into Wistia support, so never get to know Jeff and his spinning head website.
Unfortunately, no one ever gets to know my spinning head website. That is completely locked down in secret, and only you guys can see it.
Ooh, I'm going to look at it all night.
And with that, that wraps up this kind of portion of the show. If you've got your own kind of quick and easy wins, let us know. Get in touch with us at SupportOps, at Jeff Vincent, at Aaron_Wheeler, I think.
That's right.
@Aaron_Wheeler.
Yeah. That's Aaron cool. Wheeler was totally taken. He's great. He's on top of it.
Oh, so don't
that in the books.
Yeah.
Don't add him. Aaron_Wheeler. You don't want to talk to Aaron Wheeler. He, I don't know. He doesn't know what he's doing.
He's probably a delightful character.
I mean, maybe.
Your Twitter feed is just full of just cheese whiz and cartoons. And his is probably really educational and useful.
Yeah, probably. But, you know.
Yeah, probably. Well, see you guys. Moving on.
See ya.
All right, seriously, let's get to that fucking drum roll.
It's this week's shoutouts.
See, Aaron, every episode I try to sneak in a way to force Chase to put the, like, not rated for children, not safe for children tag on the podcast.
I still don't know what the limit is. Like, if it happens once, do we have to throw it up there? Do we not? Do we have to mark it in, like, YouTube? Like,
do they have people monitoring all the videos, like tagging the ones that violate the code, or is that something you like choose?
I guess so. I don't know. We're probably going to end up on their radar now that we're talking about it.
We're already on radars.
Yeah.
We're already on radars.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks a lot.
So, what is your shout out this week?
Ooh, mine?
Yes.
I want to tell you guys about a blog that I discovered. It's called. It's called. That was the best sigh I have ever heard.
Yeah,
that's best really timed sigh I have ever heard.
When you started, I thought we were going to get like a story or something. So, like in my mind, I heard, "I want to tell you a story."
Like that's the sound that I make when I'm like chained to this podcast, and then out of the corner of my eye, I just see Sherman eating my dinner. Like, my dog is devouring my dinner, and I'm just like, oh. Okay, anyway. There is a blog called Product Talk, and it is written by a product executive consultant and coach named Teresa Torres. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. She is apparently very experienced in what it takes to build great products, and I'm not. So I'm trying to learn from her, and she's done a great job of writing all this stuff down, just like sort of putting a lot of these things that I think you could probably piece together by reading like 30 different blogs from people like Ryan Singer and Aaron Wheeler and all these people. You could probably put them all together, but she has done a good job of putting like her thoughts on paper on this. So Chase, I gave you a link to one of my favorite articles so far. It's in the chat, but I highly recommend everybody checking out. It is Teresa Torres. That's TERESA Torres.com/product talk. And you will find, I promise, a whole bunch of stuff that's really useful. It was so good that I signed up for the email thing.
Whoa.
And I don't give that email up for anything.
How long have you been blogging as Teresa Torres, Jeff?
Well, a solid week. Wouldn't that be really funny if I set up a pseudonym and then I just started blogging and endorsing that blog?
Oh, she's so great. I just gave her my email. And I don't give that to anyone.
It's vefjensen.com/killyourdream/blog.
Yeah, read her X though. So that's
best perfect. Best damn blog on the internet.
Oh. I'm sorry.
Cool.
Aaron, what's your shout out for this week? I think we talked to you about what shout outs are and everything else, right?
Yeah, okay. And since I haven't actually watched all of these, I mean, there's 40 of them, so I should have. That's totally reasonable, but...
Totally.
So I don't know if people have mentioned these things before. I imagine everyone's always talking about Doodle. Have you guys used Doodle?
I think that was, like, way back in the early days we might have mentioned it, but nothing recent.
Does Jeff have a pirate hat on in real life, or is it one of the like Google Plus pirate hats?
So
I don't care. Don't even answer. I'm just gonna pretend it's real in the corner of my eye.
Well, the truth is, there is a real pirate hat, but it's underneath the Google Plus.
Oh yeah. That's true. The one that's naturally like just your head shape, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so I got two for you. I got Doodle, so that's for event scheduling, and it's really awesome. I've been using it a lot to like coordinate things with other people at the company and sometimes for customers. So basically, you send them, I think it's doodle.me, but you could just Google Doodle event scheduling. And instead of everyone like setting up, like sending each other times they're available, you actually like go into the app and check the dates and times that you're available, and then it does that for everyone and just coordinates the best time. It saves me a lot of time. And then the other one is we just started using a new app for our digest called PictoChart, PictoChart, and it's for it's basically for creating infographics, but it's like drag and drop. So it's extremely easy. If you are a lazy person that doesn't want to code stuff, just drop stuff in. It's really nice, and it has spreadsheets and stuff, so you can still get in some charts and really like it. So those are my two shout outs. You know, also get a pirate hat. They look
charts.
They look okay.
Charts.
I know, I heard they do charts, and I was like,
charts and blogs, man. That's all I got.
Charts and blogs. Mine is on the complete other end of the spectrum this week from these two gents. So I have gotten hooked on a new podcast from NPR. I say podcast, but they're on like NPR stations and everything else. It's a game show called Ask Me Another. Have you two gents like listened to this yet?
Ooh, no.
No.
Oh, that's it is good. Fantastic. So it's everything that I love about Wait, Don't Tell Me meets like rambunctious, like Irish pub kind of fun night. Jonathan Colton does the music for it. And it's kind of a co-house, kind of house musician kind of thing going on. So he's a lot of fun. They have different, they call them VIP, very important puzzlers on every week. So it's kind of like everything I love about, like I mentioned, Wait, Don't Tell Me, or like, you remember Cash Cab from Discovery Channel?
Yeah.
Like that great kind of quiz show. That was a lot of fun. It's like all that packed into a fun little hour worth of a game. So definitely check that out. Ask Me Another. We'll have that along with all the other shout outs in the show notes and the links. We'll have links there for you. That's what I meant to say. Links in the show notes. That's what we got.
Sweet links.
Sweet links. Link goodness. Yeah, this is probably like the longest hangout we've done in a while, at an hour now. So before it gets any crazier, we're just going to say that puts this one in the books. You can find show notes online, supportops.co/hangouts. You can find Aaron Wheeler online. Where is the best place to find you? Is it just we're sending them to Twitter? Is that what we're doing?
You can just send people to Twitter. I'll tweet them up a storm about where to find me.
Yeah, so @Aaron_Wheeler. Get the underscore in there. The other guy is the smarter, nicer, non-cheese puff guy, remember?
Yeah, I don't want to talk to him. He's no good.
He's no fun. Jeff Vincent @Jeff Vincent, or you can email us. We've got all of our emails in the show notes, too. So with that, I'm Chase. Until we see you again, have an awesome week.